It's the Burt Cohen Show. Sometimes the dream of America is threatened by its own government. Freedom, security, all in question. What is patriotism? What is treason? Is the war on terror, has it turned into a wider war on civil liberties? Are we, the people, powerless? Our guest thinks not. There's something we can do about that. Our guest is David Talbot, founder and former editor-in-chief of the pioneering web magazine Salon. He's also the author of the New York Times bestseller Brothers, The Hidden History of the Kennedy Wars, and a forthcoming book about the secret history of the CIA. With a group of press colleagues, David Talbot has recently launched something called Open America, the Open America Project, to bring together whistleblowers and investigative journalists. What a concept, investigative journalists, ones who are not lazy, who dig for a story in the fight for freedom of information. David Talbot, thanks very much for being with us. You know, it's amazing to me that when you and I set this up, no one had heard of Edward Snowden. Now he's either a historic traitor or a patriot. And in the article in Salon, you say there's a growing sense that this is a critical moment for American democracy itself. A national security state engorged by war on terror spending has encroached so deeply on our civil liberties that unless we fight back now, those cherished freedoms might be lost forever. End of quote. Thank you very much for being with us, David. I think people are really upset about this and concerned about this. Some people think, well, we've had the Patriot Act, and hey, guess what? There have been no September 11th since then, and that people are willing to give up some freedoms for a lot more security. And it was in 1971, in June of 1971, that the New York Times finally got to release the truth about the Pentagon Papers. Daniel Ellsberg at the time was seen by some people as a traitor. Now he's pretty much seen as a hero. And well, thanks very much for being with us, David.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Bert, for having me. You know, when you mentioned that obviously this is a trade-off between people's security and their privacy and their freedom, as President Obama said last week, you can't have 100% of both privacy and security. But, you know, the American people, right after, this is before, of course, these latest shocking revelations about the National Security Administration, this is right after the Boston Marathon bombings, which, of course, was deeply shocking to people in your area and throughout the country. But still, over 60% of the American people polled after those bombings said they were still unwilling to give up more of their freedom for security. So I think we've hit the saturation point after 12 years of the war on terror, after, as I wrote in Salon, a steady encroachment into our civil liberties, into the freedoms that make us American. And I think more and more Americans across the political spectrum, and this isn't just a liberal or left-wing thing,
sure,
at this point, it's conservatives, libertarians, are saying enough. We don't want a big brother government.
You know, it does seem for decades Americans have said pretty clearly we're concerned about creeping big brotherism. You know, President Nixon, now very famously, and there's always the comparisons, had his domestic spying, which frankly helped Carter get elected as an antidote to him. How does Nixon's domestic spying program compare to that which is going on now?
Well, I think it's modest in comparison. I think it was more targeted. I mean, he had his political enemies list, of course. He went after political figures and journalists that he thought, you know, were threats to him. But now we have just a kind of massive surveillance that, with the technology in the Nixon era, we just could never have imagined. Well, of course, some people imagined it, like science fiction writers like Philip K. Dick and, of course, George Orwell.
Oh, yes.
But the powers of the state today, the powers of the government today, just far outstrip whatever President Nixon had. And, you know, President Obama likes to present himself as a rational, you know, enlightened guy. And I think in most ways he is.
Right.
But as he said the other day, look, I'm going to be leaving office in a couple of years, and I'm going to be the target probably of some of these surveillance programs too. And in fact, for some reason, he said he thought he'd be high on the list. So this goes beyond whatever president is in office. This is the machinery of government that we have to deal with no matter who's in the White House. And it's time for us as American citizens to get some controls on this machinery that's out of control.
Yes. And it seems like that is exactly what you're trying to do with this new thing that you and your press colleagues have recently launched called the Open America Project. How is that? What is the goal of that? And how did you guys come to create that?
Well, as journalists, more and more of us were often running up against closed doors and absurd classifications of documents that supposedly had been classified for national security and were clearly in violation of law, classified to cover up crimes and embarrassments within government. And so this has been a grinding frustration for many working journalists in this country, including myself. Number two, we saw, of course, what was happening with the Bradley Manning case, that this was a pivotal moment for the country, that, you know, this country tends to run remote wars at this point. We don't have, you know, a draft army, a democratic army. We have what's becoming more and more of a mercenary or army. And, you know, what we're doing militarily is more and more hidden from the American people. When I was growing up, you know, so much of what was happening in Vietnam was on the network news every night, and that's what helped turn the American people against that war. But, of course, now they don't, starting with the Bush era, even want us to see the coffins coming home from these foreign wars in Afghanistan and places that most Americans have no feeling for, no connection to. And so, you know, when Bradley Manning leaked those images and leaked the information about what he was seeing as a young Army intelligence private, that he said he didn't think that information should stay locked inside the system, as he put it, and locked inside his own brain. These were horrific images, some of what he was seeing, of course. There were war crimes in progress.
Yes.
And so I think that's, you know, was a wake-up call for a lot of us, that, you know, so much information that the American people need to operate as a democracy has been suppressed, has been hidden, locked away, classified, and, you know, no democracy can operate in an honest way as long as that occurs. So our feeling was, look, WikiLeaks was a brave enterprise. Julian Assange, who's now, of course, forced into hiding in the Ecuador embassy in London, you know, took a brave step by putting together WikiLeaks. But that came out of the kind of hacker and cypherpunk culture. And frankly, maybe some of their review process, their filter, was not as strong as it could have been journalistically. In other words, the documents that were released by WikiLeaks could have had a more responsible overview system. Yeah. And so that's what we're trying to do with Open America, is to say, you know, to whistleblowers and people who are sitting on information that's vital to the American public for their health and their well-being and for the health of our democracy, you know, contact us, talk with us as investigative journalists. We have years and years of experience working for you know, a broad spectrum of media companies, the Washington Post, Salon, the BBC, and so on, and work with us in a responsible way to get this information out to the American people. I think investigative journalists and whistleblowers are natural allies. We are trying to do our best in the service of the American people to bring this information out. But it does have to be done in a careful way, in a very judicious way. We'll be working with attorneys. We'll be working with, as I say, some of the most experienced journalists in the country. And I think this is our way of saying to the government, enough, we're going to push back now. We're doing this in a responsible way. Peter King, the congressman from New York, who's the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, you know, I think he, you know, escalated this battle to a whole new level the other day when he said, you know what, we're going to start prosecuting journalists, not just whistleblowers. And he particularly mentioned my old colleague, Glenn Greenwald, of course, who was at the eye of this latest storm. And Glenn is now at The Guardian, but he was with Salon, as many of your listeners will recall. For many years, we kind of gave Glenn his start. And I think I'm a huge supporter of Glenn's. And Glenn fired back at Peter King, and I thought he was you know, very articulate. He said, only in America can a renowned terrorist supporter like Peter King, because remember, Peter King was a big supporter of the Irish Republican Army, the IRA, only can someone like that now define what's treason and who should be put on trial for treason. So this, you know, this war is escalating. I mean, President Obama called for a debate. I hope it's a you know, a civil debate, you know, a passionate but civil debate. Peter King obviously wants to take it in a more extreme direction. But I'm trusting the country, the media, the people themselves to all get involved in this debate and thrash it out and begin to put new checks and balances in place, because I think that's what we sorely need.
Wasn't it Thomas Jefferson who talked about how essential the Fourth Estate, the press, was to a democracy, that it's possibly the most important part of democracy? You need a free, robust press to be able to look at the government. If the government keeps all the secrets to itself, that's just not a democracy. If you just tuned in, we're talking to David Talbot, founder and former editor-in-chief of the pioneering web magazine Salon, talking about something new, a new instrument called Open America, to work with journalists and whistleblowers. And one of the things that the naysayers have been saying is that, well, Bradley Manning and Julian Assange may have put people's lives in danger. Now, I haven't seen any of this, but I think I'm guessing that that's part of the raison d'etre for Open America, is to make sure that this doesn't happen. I mean, I know what they did. I saw some of the clearly war crimes. There was some video that was released showing a U.S. helicopter attacking unarmed people and killing
journalists,
people.
Attacking a group of Reuters journalists who they mistook for terrorists, and they brutally blew them away.
Yeah, and that's all out there on video. And shouldn't the people know about that? So I wonder, do you know, is there, I mean, is that part of the reason that, you know, young people like Bradley Manning, whom I believe was just 19 at the time of his release, release of the information, they got to be careful to not give the other side, the people who call them traitors, reason to, you know, to say that, yeah, you are traitors, you did put people's lives in danger. They have to be very, very careful about that. As far as I know, that hasn't been done. So I'm guessing part of your goal is to make sure that that you can be sort of a clearinghouse for the information. One, that you're not working for the government, for the you know, the people who want to clamp down on secrecy. You're investigative journalists yourself. So has anybody's life that you know of been threatened by Bradley Manning or Julian Assange or now Ed Snowden?
No, I don't think anything has been documented along those lines. I don't think, I think many of the charges against WikiLeaks and Julian Assange for being irresponsible and for putting, you know, causing people's lives to be lost, I think were overstated. In fact, in this new film about WikiLeaks called We Steal Secrets, as one of the people on camera points out, you know, there's all this hue and cry about speculative death, deaths that were being speculated about happening in the future, while the real hue and cry should be about the deaths that actually occurred, the ones that Manning was documenting, the illegal deaths in Afghanistan and Iraq, which were war crimes. So, I mean, the government was able to shift the debate in a very skillful way, away from the kind of shocking revelations that Manning was making to the fact that there might, you know, in the future, there might be some casualties due to these leaks. But the bigger point you're raising, I think, is a good one. And I think you do need a responsible system to filter through information that's leaked. You need to have lawyers and journalists look at it. That's what we'll be doing with Open America, because often, of course, there can be unfortunate consequences from leaking a story. And so it's our job as experienced journalists, working together, as I say, with people in the legal field, to determine, you know, does this meet our criteria? Does this vital information for the public to know that affects our well-being, number one? And number two, you know, are people protected? So no one is going to be physically harmed from the release of these documents. You know, of course, way too much now has been classified. Right. And under the banner of national security, we now have, of course, an assault on our civil freedoms and our civil liberties. And that's what we're trying to roll back here and say, look, there's literally, you know, probably thousands of stories out there that the American people deserve to know about. And we're going to start actually zeroing in on some of those. Here's a specific example, Bert. And it's not just that they now have put an umbrella of secrecy over the war on terror. They've also tried to suppress our history as a nation. And this goes back decades. So, for instance, two members, including myself, of the Open America editorial board have for years, for our work on books and magazine articles and newspaper pieces, been trying to get the 1,100 documents that the CIA is still withholding in connection to the Kennedy assassination. Every government document related to the Kennedy assassination by law was compelled to be released back in the 1990s by the JFK Act, Records Act. And most of these documents were released, and they were very useful for many researchers who were trying to understand what was going on during the Kennedy years and the events leading up to the assassination. But for some reason, and we think we know why, the CIA has withheld these key 1,100 documents in defiance of the law, and they keep promising they're going to release them. Most recently, they said they would release them on the 50th anniversary of the assassination, which, of course, is coming up this November.
Right.
And then suddenly, not long ago, they changed their mind yet again and said, no, we're not going to release them, but maybe in 2017.
Maybe.
Don't hold your breath. So this is, I think, just the most arrogant kind of thumbing of the nose at the American people's right to know their own history. Of course, all these CIA operatives who are mentioned in these documents are long since dead.
Sure. Yes.
No one's being protected here. The only thing that's being protected, apparently, is the potential embarrassment of the CIA and what they knew or didn't know about the events leading up to the assassination of the president. So this is a key thing. As we were saying, these are documents that belong in the public domain. If a whistleblower were to leak documents like those, they would be abiding by the law, in a way, by the JFK Act, while breaking another law by releasing these classified documents. But this is the kind of national debate that the country needs to be having now over specific pieces of information like this.
Wow, yeah, there's so much to talk about here. It's just amazing to me. It's always seemed like, you know, America has always prided itself on being exceptional, meaning that we are a republic, a government of, by, and for the people, not owned by a rich and powerful, tiny elite, as we've seen in so many other countries in history. Yes, we need to know about our history, and I couldn't agree more. It's interesting to me how history gets filtered to high school students and younger kids these days, and how much is left out, especially with regard to Vietnam. But I think about other countries that have had a small elite that own all the information. The truth shall make you free. Information is power, always has been. You know, in El Salvador, there was 14 families that ruled the country. The people didn't have any access to information. And, you know, you think about a state obsessed with secrets. Well, we immediately think of Stalin's old Soviet Union. We think of the Stasi of East Germany, which was portrayed amazingly well in the film. If listeners haven't seen The Lives of Others, highly suggested.
Wonderful film.
Amazing film.
And that is, of course, the nightmare vision when a state does lose its democratic mechanisms and becomes, you know, this big brother kind of state. I mean, the darkness in that film,
yes,
kind of, that where people, you know, no one can trust, even within families, no one can trust each other. That's not the America we want.
No, it's not. And I always thought the America we want was about truth tellers. You know, it's government of, by, and for the people. And it wasn't that long ago. I mean, now we have Bradley Manning and Julian Assange, and now Edward, I can't even think of his name yet. Edward Snowden, right. But not that many years ago, we had Karen Silkwood telling truths about cover-ups in the nuclear power industry. And she was a hero, played very well by Cher in the film.
And it can be dangerous, as the Karen Silkwood
absolutely,
you know, incident, reminds us. So she lost her life in mysterious circumstances after leaking. And this wasn't the government, of course. This was a big energy corporation down in Oklahoma. And she felt that they were taking terrible risks with radioactive material that was harming the public. And she was going to be meeting, as we recall, with the New York Times reporter.
Mm-hmm.
She was a whistleblower.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of linkage that Open America, my new group, is trying to foster. And on her way, as I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, Bert, but she was killed in a traffic accident under mysterious circumstances.
Very mysterious. Her car went off.
On her way
to
meet this reporter.
Yes. Yes. Amazing. And Aaron Brockovich is another, you know, person who's recognized as a hero these days for spilling the beans on what she knew. So it seems to me that secrets, you know, the government owning all the information is anything but an American traditional value. It seems to me it's a well-established traditional value to celebrate responsible whistleblowers like Silkwood, like Aaron Brockovich, like Daniel Ellsberg, that this goes on and on and on. And I wonder how it has changed that so many people, I mean, you had Dianne Feinstein, allegedly a liberal Democrat, who just labeled Edward Snowden a traitor who committed treason. What the hell happened here? Why are they so ready to throw them to the wolves?
Yes, absolutely. And of course, Dianne Feinstein, who's from my neck of the woods here in San Francisco, that was very, I think, dismaying to many of her constituents here, those statements. And, you know, then she went on to even say, speaking of Philip K. Dick, this kind of science fiction-like scenario, in books like Minority Report, which of course became a great movie, where you're not just looking for criminals, you're looking for pre-criminals. In that spirit, Dianne Feinstein actually had the nerve to say, well, this information that we were gathering, this massive information on people's phone records and so on, was giving us information not just about current terrorists, but about potential future terrorists. I mean, what kind of science fiction society are we living in when that starts to happen?
And you remind me of another Californian, Frank Zappa, who on his first record had a song, "Who Are the Brain Police?" You know, the thought police here. It's so real. Well, I wonder.
Often, of course, this data that they put together that shows supposedly patterns that could result in a terrorist act of the future. You know, it's mumbo jumbo. Much of that is bad science, as a number of experts have been pointing out in recent days. So, you know, do we trust these faceless, surveillance bureaucrats, these espionage people, to be putting together information about us based on who we're calling what we're, you know, how long our phone calls are and who we're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Do we trust them to put together an accurate portrait of ourselves? I don't think so. And, of course, we have so little legal recourse to find out exactly what's in our files, what they're putting together about us. I mean, it's really getting completely out of hand.
Yeah, it really is very scary, and I think of the Stasi. And I wonder sometimes, I mean, I'm one of millions of people who has a Facebook page, and I talk about things on there. I talk about Bradley Manning and you know, blowing the whistle, how it's a good thing, how it's a proper thing, how it's an American traditional thing. I wonder if I'm putting myself at risk, you know? And I've always considered myself deeply patriotic to the Constitution of the United States, to the Bill of Rights. You know, I believe in our civil liberties. And are they watching me? Am I being paranoid here? You know, I have some courage. Okay, it's known that I have some courage, but there's a lot of people that don't. And the whole
idea... It has a chilling effect.
Absolutely.
On our right of assembly and our right to a free speech. Our constitutional rights, because I think you're right, Bert. I mean, people do. We all are on these very public platforms nowadays,
yeah.
The new digital world, and social media platforms, and we, I think, probably all are having second thoughts about what we're posting now and what we're saying, being a little less courageous. You know, the other thing that came out, of course, in all these new revelations is that it's not just Washington. It's Silicon Valley now. It's become part
right.
of this new secrecy state,
mm-hmm.
this new surveillance state. And all these companies, virtually all of them, the big ones, Google, which, of course, promises to do no evil in its corporate mantra, Google, Facebook, Apple, Verizon, Yahoo, it goes on and on. You know, Twitter, to its great credit, is one of the few, very few, tech companies to have actually done anything to resist the government intrusion into our private lives by, first of all, by publicizing it when the government tries to sweep in and gather the records and legally challenging the government's right to do so. So, you know, look, you can have a backbone. It's not that every corporation necessarily has to roll over immediately when the government comes knocking for this information. Twitter shows that you can, you know, put up some legal resistance. And so, you know, let's credit them with doing that. But by and large, I have to say, again, out here in California where I am, it's been a pretty sorry record with Silicon Valley just completely rolling over for the feds and Big Brother when they came knocking.
And that's so antithetical to the America that I grew up with, and David, I'm sure you grew up with.
And it's antithetical, supposedly, to the sort of independent libertarian culture, frankly, of the digital world. I mean, you know, this is supposed to be the cool industry. You know, this new movie now, of course, the comedy with Owen Wilson, and, you know, how cool it is to work at Google and all of that. Well, how cool is it to be Big Brother?
Oh, my goodness. 1984. I understand the sales of that book have skyrocketed. And that was
yeah.
fiction, but here...
It reads like a news story now.
Oh, my goodness. If you just tuned into the Bert Cohen Show, our guest today, David Talbot, founder and former editor-in-chief of Salon Magazine, and with a group of his colleagues, has launched Open America, the Open America Project, to bring together whistleblowers and investigative journalists in the fight for freedom of information. Now, the question has been raised. If you put everything into the age of the war on terrorism, we got to stop these guys. They did a 9/11. We can't have that again. Has it not changed? Does that not change the very context? Is there not information that correctly belongs to the government and not the public at large? And who's to say?
Well, certainly, but there has to be some legal oversight over all of this. And, I mean, look, we're at a situation where we've come to a point now where even the co-sponsor of the Patriot Act, and I think so many of these pernicious things, of course, began
yes.
with that awful moment in our legislative history, the passage of the Patriot Act, which, of course, happened in the panic right after 9/11.
Well, it was written before 9/11, but go ahead.
It began before, right?
Yes.
It was finalized after that.
Right.
But even Jim Sensenbrenner, who was the co-sponsor in Congress, of the Patriot Act, has now come out and saying, how can phone records of so many innocent Americans be at all relevant to investigations of this sort? And more people in Congress, I think, are beginning to realize that with the Patriot Act, we went to the dark side in many ways in America or American democracy. And so I think that step one is for us now to begin to peel back, if not repeal entirely, the Patriot Act, and to begin to install some much more viable mechanisms of oversight. You know, we had a huge debate in this country back in the 1970s during the Church Committee hearings, which were the first major hearings to reveal crimes and other excesses by the CIA and the FBI, both abroad and in the United States. And there were supposedly then machinery put in place to review our, you know, secret arms of government then. But I think those have been steadily eroded over the years. The CIA has constantly pushed back against it. And then, of course, in 9/11, it further emboldened all the secret parts of government to say, look, you know, we've got to become even more secret now. So it's time to finally start to shine a light on that. You can do it in a responsible way. You can do it with a judicial review, with congressional review. But those arms of government have to become more courageous themselves and not just rubber stamp all of this. I mean, let's talk about something that's related to this, the war on terror. And, of course, it's the war on terror that gives justification for all of this attack.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, this assault on democracy. And that the two are entwined. I mean, the war on terror has now become a war on our civil liberties. That's really what the message of these recent events have underscored. So, you know, we need to know what the legal protocols, for instance, are on drone attacks that are killing people all around the globe in our name. And, of course, we take many innocent lives in that drone war, as we've been finding out through leaks, not because of the government, but through leaks. And that's how we found out that the drone campaign has targeted American citizens and, abroad, and actually killed several American citizens. So we need, but the government, the White House, the Obama administration refuses still to release the legal protocols that justify those attacks. We need to have more transparency there. That's not putting anyone at risk. That's saying to us as a country, we want to know the process by which we go to war on faceless individuals, on civilians in some cases, overseas. And of course, as Obama has begun to realize and to recognize publicly, this war, a drone campaign that he escalated sharply once he took office, has actually probably created more enemies against America than it's eliminated. And so how many generations of families throughout the Middle East and other areas have we turned into permanent enemies against our country? And it's our children and grandchildren. Are they going to have to, you know, reap what we've sown today? You know, death has consequences. Murder from the sky has consequences. Yeah. It's not, you know, a video game. And I think more and more Americans are realizing that and are raising concerns about that. Obama himself, of course, with his speech before the National Defense College, also conceded that. But we need to really take this debate much further at this point now.
And isn't it one of the things about the very essence of America that, unlike many other countries, we are a self-government, we are a democratic government with a small d, that decisions to serve the public good are better made in the sunshine, that we, the people, get to participate in the decisions of our government? It's not some, you know, faceless bureaucrats. It's allegedly and traditionally our government. And therefore, when the public has the information, when we know the truth, better decisions are made. This has been at the very foundation of what it is to be an American. And it's just, it's amazing to me how so many people are willing to forget that.
Well, exactly. You know, it was the founding fathers, and I'm sure there were mothers too, who, of course, were trying to create a new society that was in opposition to the authoritarian you know, forms of government and policing that they had forced to deal with as a colony of England. And so things, you know, dark sort of aspects of government like star chambers, secret courts, things like that, those were all supposed to be eliminated by our Constitution.
Yes.
But we're getting back into those sort of that pre-constitutional era with much of the war on terror. Because we, as I say, we don't have transparency. We don't know who we're making these decisions, literally of life and death, when it comes to the war and drones and so on. We don't know what the legal procedures are there. So much has been hidden from us that we need, as a democracy, as you say, because you need to make informed decisions as a citizenry. Do we want to support this or not? We need the information. You know, another aspect of this, I think, has been, unfortunately, the cowardice of the mainstream media.
Yes.
Because we do count on the media to be, you know, part of the system of checks and balances, our watchdogs. And, for instance, when Bradley Manning, you know, had his documents that showed these war crimes in these remote corners of our, you know, empire, and he wanted to make them public because he thought the American people had a right to see them, he went first, not to some, you know, blogger. He went to the New York Times and the Washington Post, and they weren't interested. It was only when Julian Assange took the risk of taking those documents and turning them into news material that, you know, the New York Times finally consented to work with WikiLeaks on this. So we needed groups like Open America, the group I'm involved in, because we're independent journalists. We work with many of these big media outlets, but we also, I think, are willing to take more risks. We're not a big bureaucracy and media company that's on Wall Street. You know, we're struggling working journalists who, you know, have gotten to the point in our lives where we feel we need to take this next step.
Right.
And the way we're raising money, because, by the way, and I should bring this up, because we don't have big foundations behind us, or the individuals or corporations. We've gone, I think, in the greatest tradition of American democracy, and this is the great tradition of the Internet, of course, we've gone directly to the American people through Indiegogo, which is a crowdfunding website. Many great causes and projects are funded this way nowadays, of course, by things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Indiegogo and we said directly to people, look, this is what Open America is trying to do. We're bringing whistleblowers together with brave investigative journalists and breaking stories that you have the right to know. There's going to be legal costs. There's this, the cost of reporting. The investigative journalism, by the way, is not cheap, and that's why so many big companies, media companies, have dropped investigative journalist units because it costs too much money.
Right.
So we've gone directly to American people. We've said, look, if you will help us raise $65,000, we can pay for three major investigative projects, which I can talk about later.
Mm.
And we've only been up for, I think, less than a week now. We've made $7,000, which is a great start. So we're well on our way. It's a two-month campaign to getting our target. But we definitely need to spread the word, and so I, you know, appeal to your listeners that if you care about freedom of information, if you care about a free press, please visit our site at the Open America Project site at Indiegogo.com, and please help us.
I'm sure that can be done, and hopefully this will spark some of that. I find it so fascinating, the unintentional lessons of history that get learned. For example, in 71, when the New York Times, the Globe, and the Washington Post published the Pentagon Papers, it made a huge difference. And when Congress had some chutzpah and ended the secret bombing of Cambodia, which, by the way, I'm sure was not particularly secret to the people of Cambodia, but the people of the United States got some power. And it does seem that the other side said, oh, man, we can't let this happen again, you know, that they made it more difficult. And now you have these big mainstream media who seem to be running as fast as they can away from truth tellers. It did make a huge difference, and it makes it more difficult now. But I have to ask, David, if the big guys steer clear of truth telling and investigative journalism, isn't there a danger that not enough people will see it and take it seriously enough to do anything? The question of perceived legitimacy is in there. In other words, Can a bunch of small fish overpower a few large fish?
Well, I'm still optimistic in that regard, and that's one reason I went. I left the old media world to start Salon, which was one of the first independent and still independent news publications online, Salon.com. I started back in 1995, and I, you know, little Salon broke one big story after the next, and made a difference.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, American people, the people of the world, of course, we're seeing this throughout the Arab Spring and elsewhere, are hungry for information. They want that information not to be under lock and key and held by just the elites and their societies. And I think that that impulse, that hunger is so great that, you know, information, when it's important and it does get leaked, has a tendency to go viral. And it does spread like wildfire. And if, you know, if whistleblowers can come together with some, you know, as I say, independent journalists and break these big stories, I have no doubt that they can have a big impact. You know, because what happens, of course, is once the group of independent journalists and whistleblowers breaks a story, then the big boys suddenly find their courage often and repeat the stories. So there's a food chain and a ripple effect.
Yeah. Now, of course, the surveillance establishment is already fighting back, which demonstrates that they're at least somewhat sensitive to public outrage. On June 13th, for example, the National Security Agency Chief Keith Alexander said there were, quote, dozens of terrorist events that these programs have helped prevent. And so he was stressing the importance of surveillance techniques authorized by the Patriot Act and other things like that. And as you mentioned a little bit before, you know, stopping crimes before they happen. What's your reaction to his allegation that that spying on the people has kept us safer?
Well, again, I guess, you know, we have to take him for his word, because there's nothing to back that up. There's no specifics. There's been security failures, as we know, with Boston, and some security successes as a result of this massive Big Brother surveillance state. So, you know, as President Obama again said, it's a balancing act. It's a trade-off. And, you know, we as an American people have to decide how far do we want to let the Big Brother state grow before we say enough. And, you know, if they are going to push back this way and say, oh, you don't know how much we've protected you, we have to, I think, call them on that, too, and say, look, you know, we know you can't reveal maybe all the specifics for security reasons, but we want to know more. You know, what exactly are we getting in return for giving up so much of our privacy and our freedom? That has to be part of the debate. This debate has to be an informed debate. So they've got to, if they are honest about this, about wanting this debate, people in government, they keep saying this now in the last few days, then, you know, they've got to open their trench coats a little bit. And we have to know what they're hiding. We have to know, you know, some more about their procedures and the kind of information they're gathering and specific cases where this has protected the American people.
Yeah, it's interesting that Chris Hedges, another one that no doubt the government is watching, calls the war on terror a hunt for all those with the ability to expose the mounting crimes of the power elite. You know, and
that's right.
And the NSA says they need these tools. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're the investigative journalist here. It seems to me all these years of the so-called Patriot Act, there hasn't been one case brought, not one prosecution. Am I wrong on that? I mean, they have other tools to fight it, but it seems to me they're using this war on terror as a way to do something else, to have some other intent.
No, I think it's often good old-fashioned police work that, you know, results in the arrest of people who are genuine threats.
Right.
I think most Americans, for instance, don't have a lot of problems with more security cameras on public streets. I think that was, you know, the key to tracking down the Boston Marathon bombers.
Yes.
I think that's sort of an area of intrusion that probably most Americans, according to the polls I've seen, are willing, you know, to concede. But there's a whole lot of other areas that are very unclear about what kind of security value they have, and they're clearly more kind of intrusions into our democratic freedom than they are providing security. So, you know, yeah, I think the kind of success of the Patriot Act, so-called, has been way too overstated.
Yes. Yeah, and if you just tune in again, we're talking to David Talbot about something new called the Open America Project. He was one of the founders of Salon, the former editor-in-chief, and I wanted to make sure we got in $65,000. That's your goal of raising that. What's that money going to buy? You wanted to talk about that?
Yeah, thanks. So, yes, on our Indiegogo page, we have said that we will use the $65,000 to fund three major investigative projects. Number one is a drone blog, where we'll be investigating on a daily basis the operations of what we call the drone industrial complex. Now, President Obama has said that he wants to curtail now the drone war. He realizes that it's created some major problems. And yet, the drone lobby in Washington is more and more powerful every day.
Mm.
And not only, of course, are there plans to continue using drones in war zones all across the world, but they're being used more and more heavily here for security and surveillance right on our soil or over our soil. So this is a powerful lobby, involves people in Congress and, of course, in the industry itself that produces them and the military. And Jefferson Morley, who's a great veteran Washington reporter, worked for years for the Washington Post.
I've had him as a guest.
Have you? Yeah, he's a terrific reporter. And so Jeff will be running that blog and breaking some big stories about, you know, the inner workings of that drone industrial complex. So that's number one. Number two, Mark Hertzgaard, another great nationally known environmental reporter, who, you know, most recently wrote a book called Hot about how we're going to have to live in this rapidly changing climate, we and our families and our children over the next 50 years.
Yeah.
And Mark has investigated the big energy corporations and the politics of climate change and why, you know, Washington seems completely unable to, you know, break out of sort of the lobbyist grip of oil companies and the energy companies and do anything to begin to reverse the climate change process. Anyway, Mark has a series of investigative articles that he will be doing that will look at the secret fracking of California, supposedly the greenest state in the country, where the Green Revolution began under Jerry Brown when he was governor back in the 1970s. And, of course, he's governor now.
Yeah.
And California has made major strides in many ways on the environment. But Mark will look into how, you know, money is money, and the money from the fracking industry is pouring into California and trying to go around a lot of these environmental regulations now and frack the state. So that's number two. And number three is a project of mine. For the last several years, ever since I wrote a book on the hidden side of the Kennedy presidency, I've been very interested in the history of the CIA and the national security state. And I'm looking in this new project, which will become a book, at the CIA under the legendary director Alan Dulles. And I feel that many of the most controversial practices of the CIA today, its kill-at-will assassination program, extraordinary rendition, of course, where a suspect is grabbed somewhere and ends up in some hellhole somewhere halfway around the world with no legal recourse. Many of those practices began years ago during the Cold War under Alan Dulles when he was at the CIA. So my book will be a secret history of the CIA. So those are the first three projects that we're funding. We have a number of others that we're already beginning to plan. And again, one of the other key areas that we want to, you know, begin to work on are these 1,100 documents, as I said earlier, that are still being withheld by the CIA that relate to the Kennedy assassination, which the agency promised would be released on the 50th anniversary of Kennedy's death, which is coming up this November.
Yes, I've been waiting
for that.
Now
they've reneged on that, and they're going to hold on to them at least until 2017, if not longer. So, again, you know, this is whistleblower territory at this point, since every legal, you know, we've exhausted every legal recourse. And now these are the sorts of documents that do belong in the hands of the American people.
Absolutely. We've gotten a hold of that in the past and made some changes. Now, what about future Bradley Mannings, people who come across something that they may find out about it, and it just, they can't sleep at night because they know that what they're involved in is immoral, unethical, and clearly un-American. Can the Open America Project provide some mechanism? I mean, clearly they're being cowed right now. I mean, part of the idea is to scare the heck out of these guys so that they won't reveal the truth. So that it
absolutely, we are calling for whistleblowers to come forward, and we will protect their privacy to the greatest extent that we can. Of course, as Edward Snowden, though, conceded, if they want to get you, they probably will eventually get you. But we will take every measure that we possibly can through encryption and then every, of course, legal measure we can to protect whistleblowers. We're in it together with them. We'll make that clear to these whistleblowers who approach us with a valuable story, an important story. But it is a risk. They have to go into this, of course, with eyes open.
Right.
And, you know, but at some point it's a matter of, you know, it's a question involving a person's conscience.
Yes.
As you said, for Bradley Manning, for Edward Snowden, these were incredible young men who, you know, went through long nights of the soul, I think, before
yes.
they came to yeah. their momentous decisions. They realized as young men they were possibly throwing away much of the rest of their lives. And, I mean, who among us has that kind of courage? But they thought the stakes for America, for American democracy, the kind of society they wanted to live in. That's what Edward Snowden said. I didn't want to live in a society where these sorts of things could continue to happen. That's what it comes down to. And if you feel that way, and if you're wrestling with your conscience, and you feel that you need to talk to journalists who have some experience with this, and you want to work carefully with, who will be as judicious as possible and as responsible as possible, then please, you know, consider, that's our call, please consider coming forward to us in a quiet and confidential way. Contact us. Our contact information is on the Indiegogo site.
Uh-huh, good.
But I can give you, and you can find our email there, and we'll be making that, as I say, publicizing our contact information even more in the future.
Well, that's great. And, you know, I have found it interesting on my Facebook site. I deal with a lot of people who I consider friends who are definitely on the right. I don't happen to feel like I'm on the right, but I find it fascinating that it seems to me all these concerns about the new, incredibly powerful and you know, really threatening surveillance state are having the unintended effect of uniting left and right. I find this really fascinating. What do you make of that, David?
Yeah, well, Obama finally has brought us together, I think. To me, that's heartening. You know, I switch from Fox News over to MSNBC, and there's a certain similarity in the, the news stories these days or the message. I think, look, at some point, as Americans, left, right, and center, you know, we share common values.
Yes.
And these common values, the values we cherish, are, you know, our freedoms. These are the values that made this country. And again, there was an opposition to colonial rule.
Sure.
And, The men, and they were all men at that point,
mm-hmm.
who formed the Constitution, took great pains to create mechanisms that would protect us from that kind of tyranny. And so left, right, and center, when Americans see that precious structure of freedom that though it was painstakingly put together, with the threat, by the way, of their own death hanging over them,
yeah.
These men in the American Revolution who took these steps, they could have been hung for treason. They were called traitors, just like Edward Snowden and Bradley Manning today. The British Empire would gladly hunted them down and hung them if they could.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those were the risks they took to create these freedoms. Americans today are another turning point. That's what we're saying with Open America. We have to realize this. We're all at a new turning point now. American democracy is on the line. And unless we take risks again, through whistleblowing, through leaking, through fighting back against this growing secrecy state, then we're going to lose our democracy. There's no two ways about it. And so, you know, all of us, I think, have to really begin to have a serious long night of the soul ourselves, where we wrestle with our own consciences, just like Ed Snowden and Bradley Manning did, and come to a decision about what you're willing to do to fight for American freedom.
Wow. It really is that serious. Who'd have ever thunk it that we'd get to this day? But here we are. And again, I just want to make sure, one more plug for Indiegogo. What should people do when they go to the Indiegogo site?
Well, if you Google, you know, Open American Project Indiegogo, we're in the politics section of the Indiegogo, which is a great crowdfunding webpage, and we're in their politics section. And you, if you go there, you have a range of donations that you can make, everything from $25 up. And for some of those donations, you even get some goodies, books, hey, T-shirts, dinner with the highest one, dinner with the Open America editorial board, a chance to, you know, give us some of your own ideas and so on. But, you know, the main thing is this is, I think, a way for people to fight back themselves and say, look, we support you. We want a strong press. We want whistleblowers to come forward with vital information. And we want those whistleblowers to work with responsible journalists. So if you believe in all those things, please go to the Open America Project on the Indiegogo site and contribute whatever you can. And please spread the word about us.
That's what it takes. And we're going to fight for America. We are not giving up on America. And David Talbot, thank you very much for being with us. You will appreciate the song I'm going out with. It's called Democracy by Leonard Cohen. Democracy is coming to the USA. Thank you so
good
much.
Message.
Thanks very much. We're not going to give
you
up.
Thank you, Bert.
All right. Thank you.
the shores of need, past the reefs of greed, through the smog.